please update your PayPal account.
Thank you, Jim. Frank Schaefer's our guest. AWOL, the unexcused absence of America's upper class from military service and how it hurts our country, is the book. Before we went on break there, Jim brought up the Peace Corps, and then we had a conversation on the break about this sense that class issue has always existed, but sure, it did not necessarily, because you've always heard, certainly in the conflicts coming up from World War II, I guess, that the blacks were sent in first, or mm-hmm. and now that we hear stories about the Mexicans are being sent in first, that there was always this disposable entity mm-hmm. towards some of the lower classes of this country, even the white lower classes, but that wasn't always the case.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, human beings being what they are, there's always going to be something terrible going on when it comes to any human endeavor, war not being an exception. But there used to be this idea that if you had been given a lot, you owed something. And there was an idea of honorable service, not just in the military, but across the board. I mean, we had gentlemen farmers who were millionaires in their time who went up and served in Congress for a while mm-hmm. and then went back to their farms. The same idea about military service. You know, go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, look at the portraits in the American wing. You're going to see most of the leading members of the leading families at one time or another in military uniform, certainly the males. It was just considered something you did. We've lost that. But we haven't, as we were talking about before the break, mm-hmm. lost that only in the area of military service. When you look at a story my co-author Kathy Roth tells, her husband had just come back from Iraq with a helicopter squadron that he was a commander of. They were back a couple of weeks. What happens? Hurricane Katrina hits. Who's got to go down and rescue people off rooftops? Same guys who have just been away from their family for 7 months. I mean, the fact of the matter is we have a small group of people in this country who are asked to give everything while George Bush tells the rest of the country to go shopping. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was his answer for 9/11. Go shopping, help the economy. It was not a call to either drive smaller cars so that we wouldn't be dependent on the people who were paying al-Qaeda to start with. It was not go down to your recruiter's office, we're going to volunteer, and guess what? Both of my daughters went down this afternoon, and our family is going to lead by example. That whole idea of moral responsibility shared by everybody is being lost.
It's interesting because it seems that in the evolution of what's become the Republican Party, and maybe politics in general, but has they feed on that. I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot to be gained from people in power who don't care about right. the national fabric as much as maintaining power and ruling in the favor of corporatocracy.
Right.
They gain a lot by people not taking responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, and as I mentioned, I think during the break, in 1917, when the draft was instituted in the First World War, the reason Congress gave was that they were afraid that so many of the kids from our elite colleges were volunteering from the leading families, that the future leadership class would all be stripped and killed and taken out, and they wanted more of the middle class and, quote, lower classes to volunteer. We've gone from that to the point now where we have politicians of both parties, left, right, in between all points of the compass politically. And as we said earlier, where they have a commonality is not with my kid, not with my family. Let somebody else do it. And you can't have a moral leadership that does not lead from the front. And the Republican Party right now is led by men who do not lead from the front. What they do is they ask other people to do the sacrificing. And basically, are experts in photo ops with the troops. But, their kid is not standing there. And, if you talk, we cite an example in the book in AWOL that Charlie Moskos gives, who's a leading sociologist and studies these issues, talked to a bunch of recruiters at a meeting and said, if you could choose to have the recruiting budget of the U.S. military doubled or have one of the Bush twins volunteer, which would you take? And they weren't being facetious. Every single one of them said, I'd rather have the president's daughter volunteer. Our problems would be over. Charlie Moskos has another thing that's interesting. He's saying that in terms of his studies of both the United States and other democracies, the word is democracy here, conflicts in which all classes do not participate, in other words, if just the lower or middle class is participating or being asked to sacrifice and not the upper classes, this absence of leading from the front, cannot be sustained. That long-term support across the board doesn't materialize. And the reason for that is whether people are thinking her through or not, it's a fundamentally immoral situation. And that's exactly what we're facing
now. I would imagine it's something that you see in dictatorships or monarchies a lot.
Hey, look, the Persian army was a slave army whipped into action by the monarch's servants. Mm-hmm. That's not what the United States is supposed to be all
exactly.
about.
Exactly. So now what I want to know, especially given that there is certainly an amazing conflict around, you know, the redefinition of foreign policy
right.
and around how the military is being used,
right.
that, I don't know how you're going to reinvigorate this interest if some element of transparency isn't introduced to, you know, what it means to be part of the American military for real.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is somebody has to begin changing this. I mean, it's like the old color bar or any of these other things. You know, nothing's going to happen by itself. And sooner or later, there has to be a public awareness that we're talking about in AWOL and also in another book of mine coming out this fall called Baby Jack, which is a novel about a Marine who gets killed in Iraq from a very wealthy, upscale Boston family. You know, both of these books, now AWOL in print and that one not yet out, Baby Jack not yet out. But what we're trying to do, what I'm trying to do through this writing, is basically introduce the idea that this is an unacceptable position. And, you know, it starts with art. It starts with novels. It starts with films. It starts with literature. It starts with stand-up comics like you talking about it. People have got to begin to work material that essentially says, we're not going to put up with this anymore. This is wrong. This is ugly. It doesn't matter who you voted for. Doesn't matter what your politics are. What matters is that we live in a country that has a basic fairness to it. This is an unfair situation.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Frank Schaefer. It's great talking to you. The book is AWOL, The Unexcused Absence of America's Upper Class from Military Service and How It Hurts Our Country. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having me.
We'll be back with, I've just been informed, Donald Logue instead of Ed Burns from the film The Groomsman.
Whipped cream and other delights. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Surprise shifto changeo, the show's schedule. Instead of Ed Burns, we get, I think, probably a more interesting star, a more interesting talent, my friends. The first time I remember Donald Logue was from those weird MTV image spots as the twisted Jimmy the cab driver with the busted horn rims. Donald has gone on to have an impressive career in television and movies, from Jerry Maguire to The Tao of Steve to ER to the short-lived but great series Grounded for Life. He is now starring in The Groomsman, the new Ed Burns film, alongside of Ed, Jay Moore, John Leguizamo, Brittany Murphy. He's with us on the phone. How are you, Donald Logue?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, man. You've been in a lot of stuff. I went to your IMDb and I'm like, holy crap, this guy has never stopped working.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Dude, it's out of complete and utter paranoia and fear.
Well, I'm glad that I go right from that to anger, which a lot of people don't find very...
Fear is the birth of anger.
Yes.
That's where it comes from, exactly.
But you seem to at least be able to manage negotiations and being charming enough to further your career with your fear.
Well, I'm still in fear. I haven't gotten to anger yet.
All right. So now, do you find that people know you for you, or are you still that guy from that thing?
Yeah, I'm mostly that guy who looks familiar to them from that thing.
Yeah? Do you ever get
but
mad
that
at
that thing being high school?
Have you had that moment where you're like, where someone comes up to you and go, hey, wait, I know you, and you're like, yeah, it must be from my television series or the films I was in, and they're like, nah, that's not it.
Yeah, I haven't really had that moment. I just, but they're always awkward, and they're always as awkward as you describe.
Yeah. So
yeah, I've never had the self-satisfied, perhaps you've seen me on television.
You never did that?
Yeah, no.
All right. So The Groomsman all these guys seem real familiar to me. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs, and why don't you tell us a little bit about the part you play and the rest of the guys in the movie?
I play I play Ed's older brother in the movie, who's incredibly embittered because his younger brother is just, and it's probably not unlike life itself. It's like he's more successful, better looking. He's about to embark upon a really happy marriage, have kids, and just, I'm one of those guys who doesn't see that their life sucks because they've made it so. They just see the universe being incredibly unfairly aligned against them.
Hold on, that would be the Mark Maron story, what you just described.
Isn't it so true, man? You and I could just bond over a few beers over this one.
Oh, man. Yeah, boy, if I were drinking, yeah.
Exactly, the way the universe has screwed us. And so he takes it out on everybody else instead of just kind of like being honest with his wife and saying, I've got these problems going on, I'm afraid to be vulnerable and open up to you. He just is like, I'll be such a jerk that I will drive you from me, which is another kind of quality that a lot of people seem to possess.
Yeah, now so it's you, You play Ed Burns' brother. He's getting married, right?
Right.
Which is kind of interesting because the character of his fiance is already pregnant.
Yes.
Which is that's interesting because I was realizing today that that's something you would have never seen in movies 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly, and that people are mellow with it.
Right, exactly.
Right.
It would have been like this shameful, horrible thing that they were trying to hide.
Right, no, yeah, exactly, not that at all.
So, and the guy, the other guys that are in it, Jay Moore plays like the sluggo, the local guy.
Yeah, Jay Moore's the local guy who's one of the who continues to live with his father.
Yeah.
And I'm the guy, I got married, but am having problems in my marriage. And then Leguizamo plays the guy who disappeared on us 8 years ago for God knows why and comes back to reveal his secret, kind of.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it good? Is it worth waiting for?
It is worth waiting for.
Yeah, and then is there one other guy? There's one other guy, the Scooby-Doo guy.
Yeah, Matt
guy.
Lillard plays the guy who's kind of got it together, and he's really fantastic in this. He's the one with the kids, with the family, who's like, look, you know, when you grow up and you have kids, life just changes, and that's the way it is. I have two kids, you know, and I have a bunch of friends who are still 35 going on 14.
Right.
Not understanding why you can't hang out all night and waiting for a check from mom and dad to pay their rent. And it's, you know, maybe that's just our generation. And this movie, I think, bridges the gap between some of that old school thinking about what defines like a man and responsibility, but still doesn't let everyone off the hook who behaves in that manner, you know?
Well, yeah, it is kind of weird because here I am. I'm probably a little older than you, but not much. I don't have kids. I'm on my second marriage. It seems like a lot of the emotional issues and responsibilities around family life are the same as they were when our parents were coming up, but it doesn't seem like our parents thought twice about having kids when they were like 20.
Yeah.
And it was just part of the game.
But when our parents were 20, the population of the Earth was 180,000, and now it's 6.4 billion.
Yeah, they shouldn't have done that.
No, it's like, it's a different time today, I guess.
Yeah, but it just seems like our ideas about children and about our own vanity and about our own perpetual adolescence are different. How old are your kids?
7 and 5.
Oh, so you've had them a while. You're used to it.
Not too long, yeah. But, you know, I understand exactly what you're saying, because even I, at 31 or 32, when I had kids, was, you know, still people are like, whoa, that's young, which was so much older than my father. But, you know, there's this thing about not wanting kids where, you know, because some people don't want to interfere with their lifestyle or whatever, but it hadn't really been an issue before. Having kids was what life was about. And, you know, I understand not bringing kids into the world for a myriad of reasons, but there's also this complete self-absorption to your friends who are single without children.
I think that's true.
That's the level of obsession to where they're like, where should I eat? Should I go to spinning class or jazzercise or Billy, you know, like some type bow or something? It's so friggin' insane that you just can't believe it.
I really believe that if you don't have kids, you don't round yourself off as a grown-up. I think that that's true, that, and I fear for it in my own self, and I imagine this is probably an issue you deal with in the movie, that, you know, if you go on through life without kids, your self-centeredness just must become malignant in a way.
It can't, you know, the issue here is that a guy is trying to have kids is having a problem and can't cop to the fact why he can't.
Yeah.
And although everybody around him is understanding, by his own definition, that just means he's just completely a eunuch. So then thus he feels the need to take out his, like, vent spleen on everyone around him. But, you know, even if it's to take care of kids who are already, like, to adopt or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that people have to have kids, because I actually have a real respect for people who are like, this is what I want out of life, and I'm completely cool with what I'm willing to do.
I don't want kids to ruin it.
Exactly. But then people have 15 kids and don't know them or take care of them.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the thing, I'm down with just being responsible for entirely the world you create for yourself. If you want to be a crazy beat poet, singer, songwriter, cool. If you have 16 kids and can't support them that way, then not cool.
Right, I get it.
It's not about like saying, look, I'm not telling you not to follow your dreams, just be responsible to what you can be responsible for, you know?
Right. So I imagine in the film that it seems like it's almost like the guy equivalent of a chick flick.
It is.
Like, you go there, and if you're a guy, there's just no way you're going to walk out of there without some of this stuff resonating with you emotionally.
And I think for women, too, then they can see how men talk about it from the other side. And it's not just like one of those movies like Whipped, where it's someone's weird, super false fantasy of how straight men talk to each other.
Uh-huh.
like chauvinistic pigs all the time. It's actually like guys who care about each other and wonder why they're going through what they're going through and try and help each other out in their sometimes misguided ways, you know?
Yeah, and there's always, usually when you're talking misogynistically and talking that crap talk, it's only with one specific guy, and usually you have two or three other guys you talk like a human with.
Yeah, exactly. Or someone's got a weird perception that when they spoke to you, that's how you talked.
Yeah.
Like, you'll have friends who are like, in the closet through high school.
Yeah.
And there were always the one with the most misogynistically weird stuff to say.
Yeah.
And then later they were like, well, I just figured that's how all you guys were talking. It's like, dude, not at all. Whoa.
Yeah.
You're out of your mind. We didn't talk like
that. Yeah, I just want to have sex with her until she coughs up blood.
Yeah. You're like, and
what?
Everyone's like, what? Excuse me?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So now, do you and Ed Burns go way back? Is it was this a friendship kind of?
Ed and I were friends. I didn't really know Ed. I had met him a couple times, so I didn't really know him until Confidence, which was like 5 or 6 years ago, that movie. And then, and so we became friends on that. But then he called me out of the blue for this one, and since then we've become really good friends. And we have a I did another movie with him called Purple Violets after this one that he directed and wrote as well. So
in terms of like his films, his bunch of films, is this one is he growing? Is this?
I think this really marks a real growth for him. And I think one thing that he kind of got shot down by in those earlier films sometimes, where people were just like, "Look, here's a good looking dude ruminating about his problems with good looking women," and people didn't really want to give it the didn't even want to take the time to try and relate to what was going on in it. And I think now we all have kids and stuff, and it's more of an issue of people who are grown-ups dealing with that stuff. We're not like people in their mid-30s trying to pretend like we're dealing with 24-year-old issues.
Right, you're actually on the precipice of middle age here.
Exactly, which is fantastic, which is what I am, and which is such a fantastic place to be and a great place to just, so that's who I am and that's where I'm at.
That's great. It's not a movie you see very often that focuses on that. So you've got like 20 films coming out. What are some of the other ones we can look out for before we get off here?
One is, I have one called Tennis Anyone that is that I think I met you at around Aspen.
Uh-huh.
That's going to be in like Blockbuster and Hollywood Video and all those kinds of places. And I'm in Ghost Rider with Nick Cage that comes out in February.
Cool.
And then I'm in this movie called Almost Heaven, which is a Canadian-Scottish movie that I think will be really good. And
all right, man.
The Zodiac Killer, this movie that it could be called Chronicles, that David Fincher directed about the Zodiac Killer from San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Sounds good, man. We got to take off. That sounds great,
thank
man.
Thank you so much, and I hope to see you again.
Yeah, congratulations on all your success. I'm looking forward to the film.
All right, my man.
All right, Donald.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Donald Logue, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back.
He lives off bamboo and trash.
Bamboo and trash, that's me. Hey, folks, this weekend, Friday and Saturday, my friends. Friday and Saturday, the 14th and the 15th. Is that what it's going to be? Democracy Fest. Down at the San Diego State University campus, going to be me, Al Franken, Howard Dean, Maxine Waters, Hackett, Paul Hackett. It's coming down from Ohio. You're going to be there. Jim Franken's going to do his show Friday morning. We're doing our show live Friday night, so we're actually going to be able to have some callers on the last show that I ever do on this network, as far as I know at this point in time. So please, come down. There's a break, I think, through Friday on the tickets. Now, that can't be right. I don't even know if the break exists anymore. Why don't you just go to ProgressiveTalkAM1150.com and find out what you can do to be part of that. There's going to be food, and there's going to be a band, and it's going to be a bunch of confused but excited Democrats running around saying, we can do it, right? And some people are going to go, I don't know, only if we can get our crap together. And other people are going to be like, yes, we can do it. If we can all just, I don't know, are we going to be able to do it? Let's have some barbecue. That's going to be what it's going to be. Patton Oswalt is here. I've known Patton for years. We met in San Francisco. You know him from Comedy Central, HBO, some VH1 shows. He was on The King of Queens. He has CDs out. He's got a website, The Comedians of Comedy Tour. From the appearance of things, he seems to be having quite a career, because I heard you do some script doctoring as well.
I do some script doctoring.
Like, what have you doctored that we might know about, Mr. Oswald?
A lot of the Farrelly Brothers stuff. A lot of animated stuff.
You do a lot of animated doctoring?
Oh, you know what's really... Yeah, I do that, and animated doctoring is really weird because they bring you in to do a movie that's pretty much completed. They've done the movie.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. And so what they say is, we can't reshoot scenes because that would cost us $10 million, it's all computer animated. So we need off-screen voices to be yelling funny stuff.
Oh, really?
To make the non-event funny.
So you got to write, like, hey, there's Pooh Man!
Right, which I didn't know you could do that. Like, I don't know you could take, like, Auschwitz footage and have a guy off camera going, I haven't seen this many ribs since I went to Dr. Hoggly Woggly's.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's sure. So ridiculous.
Hey, what animated film is that? I think I missed that one.
Oh, yeah, that's really funny Auschwitz one they have coming out.
Yeah, the really funny Auschwitz
It's called One in the Oven.
Oh, no! Oh, my God. So when you do script doctoring, that's good.
I'm glad. Goes my Spielberg movie.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think it might be time for him to make that movie.
No.
Look, Patton, when you do a script doctoring job on a regular film and you say there are problems and it's not just a matter of jokes, is it narrative twist? Do they, you know, do you change the fabric of the film ever?
Yeah, sometimes you have to go in and go, all these scenes in the middle, you can lose them and the movie will actually make more sense.
Uh-huh.
Because what you're doing now is you're re-explaining a movie that everyone got in the first scene.
Yeah.
Especially now, these movies are so high concept. It's a very, very easy concept. Like, to quote a friend of mine, it's a donut who's in love with a hot dog. Like, that's literally what it is. And they will restate that very easy premise 8 times during the movie.
Would you like
as
to
if
tell
the audience
us,
will not get it.
Right. Would you like to tell us that friend's name?
That friend's name? Oh, he's a great writer named Dan Harmon.
Okay. I just wanted to know if
awesome
I knew him.
Awesome writer.
Now, well, because I watched The Da Vinci Code, and that thing was filled with garbage.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
They, you know, these points where it was like they could have gotten rid of half of that movie. They could have done that. I couldn't stand it. And that's not unusual. It's a bad movie.
Yeah, well, I read the book on a plane flight from LAX to D.C.
Oh, my God. You're one of those guys who can just read whole books because...
No,
you know,
that's not true. I usually can't, but that book, there's nothing to it. It's like when you read The Da Vinci Code, it's like reading a guy describing reading The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
Like, then this guy goes here, and this happens, and she says this, and it's just people standing around explaining stuff.
And you and I mean, you so more than me, you're a comic book guy, and we were kind of into the whole conspiracy mode years back, and, you know, we used to fester about that stuff.
Oh, man.
And all that stuff was hacked anyways. The whole book's a hack job.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I didn't know that you and I had an international bestseller based on our conversations at Muddy Waters in San Francisco. We literally had it. We had the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, we were there. We were working it out years ago.
And even as we're saying, we're like, this is so dumb. Who would ever read this?
Yeah, well, I was probably going, nuh-uh, dude, it was true. It's clearly true. And you're like, come on, man. This is not possible. You had more discipline in education.
I couldn't even see that movie. I couldn't even imagine that it got made.
I know. It was horrendous.
Good Lord.
So I went to my high school graduation. Have you ever done that?
My
high school reunion, I mean. Have
your
you
reunion?
Done that?
Yes, I did.
And now, my experience of it, what did you go to, your 10th or 15th?
10th.
You went to your 10th.
Yeah.
Didn't you find a lot of satisfaction? I found it to be completely worthwhile.
Yeah, well, I found a lot of satisfaction, and I was really satisfied in all of a lot of the cliches that got kind of busted.
Did they? Like, which ones?
Okay, the homecoming queen, our homecoming queen,
still
looks exactly the way that she looked in high school. She's not aged, and she's a neurosurgeon now.
Oh, my God.
She's a neurosurgeon in North Carolina. But,
and
again, she's really nice and friendly to everyone. And these two other girls that were on the court that were not elected homecoming queen were really super overweight. Like, they'd aged so badly. And what was so cool was they still acted the way that they did in high school to me.
Mm.
So, like, I was coming up and trying to... I didn't want to be mean to anyone, so I was like, hey, Donna, hi. Like, I was being very like friendly, and they'd be like, "Oh, hey, Pat, yeah, how you doing? Yeah. Like, just get away from me." I'm like,
yeah.
"Honestly, I'm not bothering you guys. You have no idea how polite I'm being right now." You know what I mean?
Isn't that weird how those roles kind of lock into shape?
Oh my God, they never got out of it.
Well, I never got out of it either because I'm looking at the corner table full of jocks, one of whom like ballooned up to like there was some satisfaction in the fact that the guys were completely huge and ugly.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to talk to them, and I had that feeling like they were sort of half goading me to do stand up, and I'm like, I'm not putting myself up in front of those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not, for that kind of ridicule, like it still existed, and I talk about that on stage sometimes, that there's part of me that still, when I see a kid in a letter jacket on the street, there's part of me that goes, oh no, be cool, man.
Yeah.
And I have not been able to get rid of that.
Because I think Kurt Vonnegut said high school is the Central American experience, and nobody really graduates from high school. Nobody really graduates. They're like, I graduated from high school. Well, you got a piece of paper, but trust me, you haven't graduated from high school.
I was kind of happy to see I was really happy to see a lot of the girls, actually, because as I said earlier in the show, a lot of them aged better. A lot of them had gotten wiser. Some of them had been through divorces. They had kids.
Yeah.
And it was sort of interesting talking to these girls that, when I was younger, were so unattainable and was so nervous to talk to them. And all of a sudden, you're talking to them as grown people, and it's like, well, I've been dying to have this conversation with you for 25 years.
And there was a couple girls that were like, why didn't you ever ask me out? But I'm like, because you were in this other realm that I needed 8 keys and a sword to get into. What are you talking about? And they're like, if you would just, like, it really makes you think, you know what, you should just be kind of ignorant and oblivious and ballsy and just ask for stuff. Because you never know, you might just get it. Hey, give me that.
Yeah, but you know what? I did that a couple times, and sometimes when
really?
In high school. Yeah, but you know, it's easy to say that in retrospect.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is like they might have been saying that to you just to ruin whatever thoughts you had. Like, it's better off that they remain unattainable as as for you to walk out of the reunion going, I can't believe that.
You know what?
I could have just asked.
Because then they can go, oh, good, I'm haunting someone.
Exactly.
Exactly. My life has meaning. I'm haunting someone now.
I've ruined his memory. Like, now he's got to be disappointed and have regrets.
Oh, yeah, right.
They've planted they've sown regrets into your mental garden is what they've done.
Oh, okay. And they've changed your memories.
Yeah.
Your memories are now totally tainted and
different. Yeah, like you missed the boat somehow.
Right.
Not that they were just asses to you.
And you got to go back, hey, she was actually kind of cool.
And she wasn't.
Yeah.
Man. I did that once. My friends talked me into asking a cheerleader to homecoming. Like, I even had a shot. But four guys had created enough momentum that I did it. And there was no way. Literally, I think I started crying, you know, in the middle of asking it. Like, literally, I was like, you know, Karen, do you, this is stupid. Why am I even doing this? You know? And there was no, like, and you know when he asks things like knowing that the answer is going to be no, it's like, you don't want it. You know, I'm not even going to bother. All right, why not? Do you want to go to homecoming? Did you go to, homecoming. Did you go to your homecoming?
Yeah, I did.
Both of them, junior and senior?
I went to junior and senior homecoming. And you know what? Senior homecoming, I was so pissed off because the theme, you know, they always pick the song to be the theme for the homecoming. Our homecoming theme was Bruce Springsteen's Glory Days, and I kept trying to go,
really?
That is a song about graduating high school and your life becoming a ruinous shambles because you don't do anything with yourself. And their argument was, it's the boss. The boss, dude. Like, that's as far as I lost the argument. I'm like, why don't we just have the Talking Heads' Road to Nowhere if you're going to go that bleak? Just do the Black Angels' Death Song by Velvet Underground if you're going to go that awful.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Kate, did this happen to you at your reunion? Because this was a cliche that really came to life.
Uh-huh.
The crazy, drunken party girl that is now a complete, clean, born-again Christian. Like, the girl that slept with everyone that was always hammered.
Except me.
She didn't sleep with me either, but this was a girl that senior year was dating the drummer from Poison. We're living in Northern Virginia. She didn't graduate. She got her GED later. He bought her a Porsche that she then wrapped around a tree in a drunken haze and messed her face up. And when I saw her, she looks fine now, but she's with her husband, who's a minister, and they do ministry and missionary work in Russia.
Wow.
She's totally cleaned up.
A couple of those girls, I think, are sober now, but I didn't have enough time to really get into the evangelical nature.
But that's a big cliche, and that very much happened.
Like the cliche that they turn their life around, they become the exact opposite kind of deal?
Yeah, but they do it in that really aggressive way, like they've got to aggressively fight their past, because their past is so horrible for them.
I found what was really good is a couple of the cheerleaders, the ones I knew, actually turned out to be pretty decent women, and that surprised me. One of them was horrendous.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but what are you going to do? And then the one guy, you know, the guy that you never really noticed in high school, but you knew he was there.
Yeah.
That, you know, the kind of like, hey, how you doing? You know, that guy that wasn't quite retarded, but was half retarded and was just sort of around.
Right.
You know, a lot. You could not remember him. He was there, and he had changed very little. You know, it was one of those things where
really?
You're sitting there talking to a couple people, and all of a sudden this presence just kind of looms over here, and it's like, ah. And you're like, oh, my God, you haven't changed at all. And you want to be nice to him now just to pay the price for being
right.
the dick that you were to him in high school, because, you know, that trickles down. People like you and I are bullied by jocks, and you kind of trickle it down to, were you a bully at all?
What it is there's the outcasts like me, and then there's the people that I don't think anyone's ever done a movie or written a book about, is it's the outcast to the outcast.
Exactly.
I almost think that they're created in some other dimension and just dropped into high schools.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have someone to abuse.
Yeah, or at least to realize, like, oh, at least I'm not as bad as that guy.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. There are a couple of those guys. So what do you got? Are you doing anything?
I'm working on that right now. I'm working on the new CD, and I want to record it in November. And so what I'm doing is, because I love going to the Comedy Death Ray at the UCB Theater and the Largo and places like that, but there's this website called aspecialthing.com that I love, but it's all these, like, young Lester Bang, you know, like, budding
like
Lester Bang.
I know, you can't do a set anywhere.
Well, you can do a set, but it's going to be dissected, and usually what's really bad is it's usually dissected pretty well. These people are deep fans of comedy. They're not being mean. They know when you have an off night or when you have an on night, and just so, for someone like me who has such a fragile ego, what I'm doing is I'm going to all these little kind of no-name places that these guys don't go to yet, so I can just – all I'm doing is working on new material.
Why don't you tell us what those are?
I'd rather not.
Yeah, well, you ought
I'm
to tell
– very quiet.
You ought to tell Andrew Donnelly not to tease who's going to be the special guest next week so much if you want to try and avoid that attention. I know what you mean.
Well, the other thing is in Andrew's case, I had taken that gig a while ago. We're doing the Comedians of Comedy at the Troubadour on August 15th, and they've asked me – don't do any advertised shows until the 15th. So the few shows that I'm doing that I'd said yes to, I'm like, can you just drop, like, hints that I'm doing them and not, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I've been doing a lot of movies lately, which is very frustrating because...
Must be horrible.
Well, I'm very lucky to be doing them, but they're usually little indie movies.
Yeah.
And so they're very... It's really exciting material, but... You're usually... The schedule's always up in the air, and I have to end up canceling shows. Like, I couldn't do Doug Benson's interruption on
Friday.
It was so frustrating just sitting there not being able to go in.
Did you go to that? I ended up not going to the party at all.
I didn't. By the time I got off work, it was so late, and I'm got like makeup on, and I've been eating bad craft service food. And I knew I looked like even more of a troll than I normally do. So I was like, I don't want to be seen.
I want to go back to where you said you had a fragile ego, because that's interesting.
Oh man,
really? You?
Oh, good Lord, dude.
How come I always thought that you were really confident? You mean this is all a big sham?
Totally. What are you talking about?
I thought you were, like, well-grounded, and you had at least one good parent that instilled some discipline in your life.
No, I had the really stable dad that I can't quite live up to. The really zen Vietnam vet guy.
Apparently they told you to do your homework, and you excelled, and you were, you know, right?
I didn't excel that much.
No?
I did okay in high school. I did... barely okay. In college, I was actually pretty awful, I think.
Really? You're shattering my myth of Patton.
Oh, and no.
Now,
you know what sucked about college? Maybe this happened to you, too, but...
Well, hold the thought, and because it might have happened to me.
All right.
I don't think... you know, I love you, man. We'll be back in a second with some jokes, a little more Patton, and we're not going to tell you where he's playing.
Yeah.
It's top secret, because he's going to do another 4-hour CD. It's a one-night box set by Patton Oswalt. Manitoba Mad Cow Mania. Mark Maron.
That's right. We're here with Patton Oswalt, who's going to be doing his new CD around town. I'm middling for Louie in Irvine in a few weeks, so I can work out my Comedy Central thing.
That is a ridiculously great show, by the way, anyone listening. Mark Maron and Louis C.K. in Irvine.
It's going to be
good.
It's going to be...
Oh, my God.
It's a sweet club, too, isn't it?
It's interesting. You're going to get some nice extreme reactions from some of the audience members, which will be great.
So what are you talking about college? About college? You said something like, well, me and you probably then we...
Well, my first 2 years of college, I think I did okay. Like I was like B-. And then after I started doing stand-up between freshman and sophomore year, I realized that's all I wanted to do. So junior and senior year of college were really bad for me because it felt like that dream you have where you're back in high school, but you've already graduated and you want to get out. And I just wanted to leave college so badly, and I had no interest anymore.
That's weird. I did 5 years undergrad because I had no desire to ever leave, to the point where I took the last year I broke into. I had about one semester's work to do, so I took it over a year, and I spent a really, really... put a lot of work on to becoming a tremendous alcoholic and really starting to explore what I was, and causing a lot of trouble. Thank God my parents were willing to keep me out of the house that long to support my alcoholism.
That's great.
But I was able to, on that plan, graduate with honors, whatever that means. But I don't know how it was possible. I guess taking one class a semester helps.
I had to petition the Committee on Degrees to let me graduate because I was so indifferent. All I did was take English courses because I was majoring in English. And there's that thing where if only a certain number of courses in your major count towards your graduation.
Right, right.
So I was like 9 credits short. I had to petition them. It was a huge
mess. But this one will fit. This one could be a math class.
It got so bad.
Yeah.
Here's when it got really bad was when I was talking to my guidance counselor, and he goes, you really should have read the manual. And he was right. I hadn't read the manual. But he goes, you spend another year at college. You can hang out. It's fun. A lot of people take another year at college. And I said, look, I kind of have a career going and I want to get started on it. He goes, he was interested. Like, oh, what are you doing? I said, I'm a comedian. And then he said, I doubt this college wants to be known for producing comedians.
So move along.
It's so nasty. God.
Yeah. Patton Oswalt, PattonOswalt.com. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to do the jokes now.
Okay,
this is our short order news for today.
Awesome.
The world's first test tube baby is pregnant. Louise Brown, who is now 27, said she plans to raise the child like she was raised in a small town where everyone calls you freak 8 or 9 times a day. Louise and her husband of 2 years plan to name their child after its grandfather, Pyrex. Hello, Zasan Pyrex, we're going with.
Bam!
According to the House Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee chairman, the White House possibly broke the law by keeping intelligence activities a secret from lawmakers responsible for overseeing them. To clear things up, the chairman said that they would investigate the investigators who were investigating the investigation. That should do it.
Whoa.
A 62-year-old child psychiatrist has become Britain's oldest mother after undergoing fertility treatment. Both mother and future orphan daughter are doing fine. The 62-year-old woman was impregnated through in vitro fertilization because Ashton Kutcher is already in a relationship.
That must have looked like a baby coming out of a drape. A set of drapes.
And that'll be on Patton's new CD.
Thank
you. He's going to write that down. Thanks for joining us, Patton.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, we've got Svetlana's going to be here, Rod Nordwind. He's from Time now, right? Time Magazine now? Yeah, he's great on Iraq. Donald Loge. Do you pronounce it Logue or Loge? What would you say, Patton? Donald Loge?
I think it's Logue.
Yeah, Logue. Donald Logue will be here as well, I believe. And I think Jeff DiCarlo. Nice seeing you, Patton. Happy birthday, Jim.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Good night, sheeple. Happy birthday, Jim and Andy.